The following program is a PodcastOne.com production. Recorded live backstage, this is Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Now, here's your host, John Horn.
Hi, I'm John Horn. I'm the host of Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Today, we talk to Dana Delaney. You probably know her best for China Beach. She also has a ton of theater credits. And she was also one of those actors who was on television before it was cool to be on television. Now, every actor wants to be on television. But when she came on China Beach, she was definitely ahead of the curve. So listen up, Dana Delaney on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
You guys, it is Kelty Knight, Jack Bannock, and Becca Tobin from The Lady Gang, and we are so excited because this week we have the one and only RuPaul as our guest.
That's right, you better work.
Yeah. See, isn't it already so good?
You're going to be inspired, you're going to laugh, you're going to cry, you're going to have a moment. It's going to be the best.
Oh, we can't wait.
Download now at PodcastOne.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Now back to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
We are joined now by Dana Delaney. Dana, welcome to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Thank you, John.
So I don't want to put you on the spot immediately, but and I know the internet is unreliable, but I went and looked at your earliest credits, and I want to know if you can remember these performances. Ryan's Hope, Bar Patron. The Fan, Saleswoman in Record Store.
Ryan's Hope, I think I was an extra, obviously. No, but The Fan, that was my first movie. That was exciting. That was really exciting, actually. Yeah.
And what did the Saleswoman in Record Store do?
I was a punk rocker. I wore leopard, which I think was my own coat, which I still wear a lot of leopard today. And I had a scene with Michael Biehn, who I later did Tombstone with. I do remember Ed Bianchi was directing it, who went on to do a lot of Deadwoods. He was like the most famous commercial director at the time. But he wanted to improvise before we started.
So you got to wing your lines? What did you do?
He said, so let's improvise a little bit. You know, how do you feel about him? And my character was a punk rocker, and I said, well, I think he's in. I used a word you can't use on air.
You can. It's a podcast. You can say whatever you want to say.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I said, I think he's a faggot.
And you can't use that one. What are you saying?
Because that's what my character would say. And Michael went, I'm not doing this, and walked off.
I'm not going to be humiliated by that young punk rocker. I think that's a great sign. That's like, I've gotten under his skin. That's what you want as an actor,
oh,
right?
Oh, I think I bugged him for the rest of his life.
Did he come back? Did he do the scene?
Oh, yeah, we did the scene, yeah.
You do remember that scene very well.
Yes.
But it's also important because I think every actor is looking for that first job. And I don't know how long it took you to get that first film role, mm-hmm. but clearly it was a good part. I mean, you got it was a part. You were not like, you know, third grocery shopper from the left.
That's right. And it was a Lauren Bacall movie. So I was very,
wow.
very excited about that.
How hard was it to get that first job, or did it kind of fall into place rather neatly?
I can't remember the timeline of that. I was lucky. I think I was doing odd jobs in New York for maybe a year and a half before I got a real job.
Were you out of college at that point?
Yeah, I graduated. I was in New York. You know, that's what you did. You went right to New York and, you know, did summer stock, got my equity card, all that stuff.
That sounds like the actor's life.
That's the
whole point of it.
Yeah.
You said not that long ago, the reason a person first gets into acting is because you want attention from your parents as a child.
Mm.
Does that mean as a little kid, you were always kind of hamming it up?
I was very shy, actually, as a kid. So I would put on skits as, you know, it was a way to sort of channel, get out of that, I think. You know, and that's where I just had fun. I mean, my family was very New England waspy. They just thought I was showing off. You know, they didn't take it seriously.
And when did you take it seriously?
I always knew I wanted to be an actor.
Really?
Always.
From what age?
3, maybe.
Wow. Yeah. What was it about the job that was so appealing to you?
It sounds really pretentious, but it feels like a calling for me. I just really love it. I still love it after all these years. I still love it. I love again, it sounds very pretentious, but, you know, once in a while when you have that moment that's true, it's just a real high, you know?
Do you remember when you felt it for real on stage? I suspect it was probably in school that you felt what you thought it would feel like, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen very often, but yeah.
But that first time, I mean, it's losing your virginity.
Exactly.
You kind of remember that.
Yeah, I just think it should be fun. What's one thing nobody really talks enough about, I think, that it should be fun. It shouldn't be painful.
Did you? It's kind of like losing your virginity.
exactly. Yes.
Wasn't planning to go there. But in high school, I mean, where was it where you either had a teacher or had a setting where you
like... I remember it was elementary school.
Really?
And there was a boy who was playing Aladdin, and I don't know, maybe it was fourth grade, I don't know, boy playing Aladdin, and he kind of like chickened out. And I had short hair and I kind of looked like a boy. And they said, well, can you do, you know, you're going to do play Aladdin, the lead in the play. And I remember Connecticut, drove to New York a lot with my mom. And I remember memorizing the lines in the car going to New York and back. And then I remembered every one of them and did the play. And I thought, yeah, I could do this.
Were your parents people who would go into New York and see shows? And did they bring
yes.
you along?
Oh, yes.
Because that
yes.
must have been amazing as long as they're choosing the right shows.
Well, what was really cool was... I think one of the first plays I ever saw was Oliver, Sound of Music, Oliver, that era. And Peter Coe directed that, who also directed my first Broadway play.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was kind of full
and
circle.
Did you tell him that?
I did tell him that.
Yes,
I was 23.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Not when you saw Oliver.
No,
when
my
first play.
Yeah.
What was that play?
It's called A Life by Hugh Leonard, an Irish play.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So when you're coming into New York with your parents and you're seeing shows and you know at that point that you really want to be an
yes.
actor, are you thinking, I want to be a stage actor, I want to be a film actor, I want to be a TV actor? Are you thinking about what that might look like?
Oh, in those days, you only did stage and film. You did not do television. That was very looked
down
upon.
How the world has changed.
Yes, really looked down upon. Yeah, yeah.
And yet, television turned out pretty good for you.
Yeah, I mean, I say to people, yeah, you know, I feel like I knew ahead of everybody else how good it could be, especially for women. The roles were much better for women.
On television?
Yes.
So when did that happen? Was it a kind of an epiphany where you saw that parts in TV were better than what you were offered
no,
in film?
No, I'll tell you exactly how it happened. I know exactly how it happened. I was not going to be on TV. I wanted to be, you know, in film like everybody did then. And I'd just done 3 movies in a row, and I thought, okay, it's happening. And then I got sent the script, China Beach, and I didn't want to do it because it was a TV show, and... my agent, who's also was named Delaney, Jenny Delaney, this wonderful woman. I'm going to swear again. And she said, you're a fucking idiot.
If you don't do
if
it.
If you don't do it. And she said, and because the script was so good. And so I did the pilot.
Well, how did you get cast? I think
John
Sacred Young,
yeah,
who
that...
created the show, wanted you, but there were probably other contenders.
Yes. There was many, many screen tests, and it got down to be between me and Helen Hunt, and I ended up getting it. But ABC did not want me.
They wanted Helen Hunt.
They wanted Helen
so
Hunt.
So how did you win the part? Or was it John?
John just stood up for me, whatever that word is. Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
So you shoot the pilot.
Yeah.
And what happens?
Well, we shoot the pilot. And then I happened to go to Cannes that year because a movie I did, Patty Hearst, that Paul Schrader directed, was at Cannes. And I thought, wow, that'd be really fun to go to Cannes. This is my dream, being in Cannes with a movie. And I go there and I'm hanging out. And all these people come up to me and say, China Beach, that show, it had just premiered like the month, maybe 2 weeks before. And all they wanted to talk about was China Beach. I was like, what? That TV show? I'm in a movie. And they were talking about China Beach.
That is an epiphany.
Yeah.
That is like, this is the right decision. Your agent clearly
yes,
had the right.
Right.
But what was it about the series? Was it that you had a strong, interesting, multi-dimensional character to play?
Exactly, which I was completely spoiled by, that this was such a great character and great writing and great directing, everything. It just fell into place. Great cast. Everybody in that cast was great. And I thought it was always going to be like that. And then it's not.
Well, let's talk about it while it was on, because you trained in theater in college, right, at
mm-hmm.
Wesleyan?
Yeah.
So you have trained in theater, you've done plays. When you are a well-trained actor doing a weekly series, how important is it to have that training behind you? And how does it come into play?
I think it's always good to have some kind of technique to back you up when things aren't working. You know, that's what technique is for. And yeah, discipline, definitely. I'm very, very disciplined.
In terms of, like, knowing your lines?
My line, preparation, being on time, knowing the responsibility of being number one on the call sheet. I know what that entails. And I like it. I like looking out for everybody.
That series was on for how many seasons?
Really not that long.
I was going to guess six.
No, I think it might have just been like four at the most. Maybe not even full four.
So a series like that can do so many things. It is obviously, in terms of work, great. To have a series, a recurring series, is an actor's dream. Yeah. To work with interesting, creative people led by John Segret Young is another great gift. And to know that it's going to come back and that you have it to come to return to, what does it do in terms of opening your career up to other people? And does it work both ways, that then people see you as a television actor and not as a film actor?
Yeah, I think back then there was still a lot of snobbery about television. So, you know, some people were interested in me after that for movies and some people weren't, you know, depended.
I think one of the things you did right after that was Exit to Eden. Is that right?
No, I did other movies before that.
But was there a movie that you did kind of in reaction to the way in which you thought you were perceived? That was, and the way in which you're perceived being not totally fair or accurate, that's like, I'm not that person, I can do other things. Do you become intentional about trying to mix it up?
No, I think you kind of choose whatever you're offered. I think people thought I was trying to do something on purpose and I wasn't. Because the movie I did right after China Beach was again with Paul Schrader, Light Sleeper, which I love doing. And then I think I did House Sitter, which was a comedy. And then I did Tombstone, which was a Western. And then I did Exit to Eden. Yeah, so it was kind of, I wanted to do everything.
But Exit to Eden, I just remember being a film where people were like, what? Wait,
well, I think,
who is she? I thought she was this other person.
I know, which really kind of flummoxed me because I'm an actor, you know? And I got so much heat for that movie, but I just say to people, you have to remember the last movie Gary Marshall did before that was Pretty Woman, which was about a hooker. And it was a huge hit. So, you know, people kept saying, trust Gary, he knows how to do this. So, no, I didn't go in trying to change people's opinions. And I remember people going, I guess people don't want to see you like that. And I'm like, I don't think that was the issue. I think it was the movie.
When you say you have to get work and you have to say yes, how does that math change as your priorities change? Every actor has to take jobs that he or she needs, and every actor at a certain point takes jobs he or she wants, and they're not always the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance those two at any point in your career, and does the equation of the balance change as you get more experienced?
I have to say I'm really lucky that I haven't had to do that very much because I only support myself. You know, other people have more responsibility financially than I do, so I can afford to just be picky, you know? And sometimes you take a job thinking, oh, I should do this. I don't want to do this. I should do this. And then it turns out to be great, so you never know.
So how do you get counsel? Who do you listen to? Is it yourself?
Yeah, I'll ask other people's opinion, but then I'll decide by myself.
And if
my friends say to me, you don't listen to me anyway.
So maybe they tell you the opposite if they want you to
do
something. Say, don't do this, and you'll end up doing it.
Yeah.
The nature of roles evolve as actors grow older. You don't get to play, you know, a high school student or a college student. But your priorities as an artist probably change as well in terms of the things that are important to you. So are there things that you say no to now that you might have said yes to before, not defined by age, but defined by like what the message of this piece of storytelling is?
Yeah. Again, I've been pretty lucky in being able to stick to that most of my career. But yeah, I mean, I would say I don't do a lot of like wives and mothers, you know, just it's not something that interests me. because I've never been married, so it's not like my thing. If it's a twisted wife or mother, that would be interesting.
The more twisted, the better?
Yeah, yeah.
You also have had a great career as a voice actor. You have.
Some, yeah.
You have. And I think in many ways...
Not like you.
Well, I don't know about that. But I think in many ways people look at voice acting now the way they might have looked at television acting 20 years ago. They yeah. don't understand how difficult it is and what it entails. Because as a theater actor, film actor, stage actor, you have your hands, you have your body, you have camera angles, you have gestures, you have everything. And a voice actor, not so much.
Yeah, but it's like radio theater, right? It's really fun. Again, it should be fun. My favorite thing was playing Lois Lane, which I got to do for a long time in Superman, the animated series on Warner Brothers. That was fun. Mask of the Phantasm, which is a Batman animated film. That's one of my favorites. And that was my first. That was fun. People still talk about that one. Some people think that's one of the best Batman movies out there.
Well, I can think of a lot worse ones, so I think that's high praise. Yeah,
but, I mean, for me, playing Lois Lane was a dream come true because I grew up reading all the comics, and I remember when Lois had her own comic. And she was, you know, the epitome of the career girl. She was like an idol of mine.
Right. I mean, and she was also strong and independent and feisty mm-hmm. and capable.
Yeah. She was everything I always wanted to be.
You have done an Amazon series, Hand of God, mm-hmm. and... I think if you look at the bookends of China Beach to Hand of God, you have been around for...
A long time.
No, I was not going to say that. You are putting words in my mouth. You have been around for the acceleration of the quality of television, that original storytelling that you wouldn't see. I think China Beach was in many ways groundbreaking that way. But as somebody who has worked in theater, film, and television... To be working in television today must be extraordinary.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It is great. There's so much of it now, as you know, it's hard to, like, what should I watch? It's hard to pick. I wonder when we're going to get to the point, you know.
Peak TV.
Yeah, I wonder when that's going to go the other way. But so far, so good. Yeah, I mean, I got to say, the model now is what England has been doing for a long time, of only 10 episodes. So it doesn't take up your whole life. You can still tell good stories. You don't have to stretch it out too much. It's pretty great.
How do you balance the things that are interesting with the things that flex other muscles? Because you, in terms of like choosing, am I going to do something that is going to be really difficult? I'm going to go back on stage. How important is it to find things that are a little bit scary?
Oh, constantly. I'm constantly trying to scare myself. I have to.
Yeah. So what are some examples of that?
Well, I just did one. I wrapped Hand of God last August, and this being May. We're in May? Yeah.
We're in May. Yeah. You're recovering from Cinco de Mayo,
yes,
remember?
Yes, yes. Wrapped last August, and I kept saying no to more the same old parts, you know? And I just ended up doing... Night of the Iguana at ART in Cambridge. And I'd never done Tennessee Williams before. And that was scary. And I came in a week late because I replaced someone. And it was a fantastic experience. Really great.
You had never done Tennessee Williams?
No.
Never in high school, in college?
Just scenes.
Wow.
You know, scenes in acting class. Yeah.
How does the language hold up? How does this?
Really holds up.
Really?
Yeah. Really holds up. Most people think of Iguana as sort of the end of his fertile period. You know, it's kind of the last one of his great plays and before he got more experimental. And it's very poetic, but it's also very earthy and real. I mean, some of my friends came to see it in Cambridge, which I blessed them for. They came all the way to Cambridge in a storm and a blizzard. They were like, did you guys rewrite this? Because they couldn't believe how modern it is.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the highest praise possible.
Yeah.
What is it like to come into a theatrical production at the last minute replacing somebody else? I would imagine
it was scary.
That is really scary, and that it's hard enough to do the play, but it's hard enough to say, I'm actually going to help you and save something that might be in trouble.
Well, I mean, they couldn't have been more accepting. I got a call from Michael Wilson, the director, who's really knows Tennessee Williams, and he's done a lot of his stuff. And we talked about it, and I was playing Maxine, and I said, I need to tell you three things, you know, before I come. I said, I don't have a big ass, which is referred to a lot in the play. This laughing thing she does, the first moment she comes on, Williams describes her as somebody who laughs like, ha! You know? I said, can we play with that a little bit? And I said, and I don't speak Spanish because she has Spanish in it. He says, all right, we can work those out. So I said, all right, I'm on the plane tomorrow. Like, I just got on the plane to Boston. And there were James Earl Jones, Elizabeth Ashley, and Amanda Plummer, all who have done Tennessee Williams before, you know, well and a lot. And they were so great. And Amanda, who I just fell in love with, said, when I heard that you were doing the part, I cried. I was like, oh, thank you.
Cried in a good way.
In a good way. Yeah, well, you're right. It could go the other way.
I cried. I cried myself to sleep. So I can figure out how you solve the Spanish problem, coming up with a laugh. How do you solve the large ass problem?
They changed those lines. Yeah, they took that out.
So if they did change the play, it was to flatter your butt.
It was just, you know, it was either that or pad me, one or the other.
That sounds very good. How long did the play run?
They only do a month, 6 weeks there, I think, altogether.
As an actor who has done a lot of film and television, what does it feel like when you're on stage in real time, feeling the audience react to scene by scene, moment by moment? How gratifying is that?
It's pretty great.
Terrifying, whatever the right verb is.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I've grown into. I'm not one of those people who loved being on stage. And I've said this before, but I think it was misinterpreted. I always felt like the audience was judging me. I didn't see them as my friend when I was younger. You know, I felt very self-conscious because I was shy, I told you. So it's taken me a long time to realize, no, the audience is with you. You know, they're part of the experience and you need to sort of ride the wave of the audience. And that's fun. But it took me a long time to get there.
Are you still shy? And is that still what motivates you as an actor, that you get to be somebody in a fictional world that you couldn't be in real life?
Definitely. Definitely, yeah. And I have to credit Dan Sullivan, the director, with helping me get over that. Because I did Dinner with Friends with him in New York. I replaced Lisa Emery, who was fantastic in it. And then we did another production here at the Geffen that Dan directed, and I switched roles, and Rita Wilson did the other role. So that was fun to switch roles. And Dan just showed me, because he's such a good director, that you could be real on stage. You don't have to act with a capital A, which I always had in the back of my head. I'm not acting enough, you know? And he told me, you know, it's just about grounding it and being real, and then the audience will come to you. You don't have to go to them.
I think you had an opportunity to go back to the boarding school where you attended
and
do a quick, what was it, a workshop, artist in residence program?
Yeah.
What was that like? And did you find yourself tempted to give advice to the students that maybe you wish you had heard when you were in their shoes? And what was that advice?
Well, it was really fun for me, first of all, because two classmates of mine from my class at Andover were running the theater department. They had stayed on as teachers. So that was fun. And I ended up going to the high school prom, too, which was fun, too.
Did you get a date?
One of my former classmates, a girlfriend of mine, came and we went together. We just did scene work and then I answered questions, and it's always about trusting your instincts, you know, and don't let other people throw you off. I mean, the biggest thing for me in terms of, you know, people directing me was trusting my instincts, because I was raised to be such a good girl that I'm very directable. I'll do whatever you want, even if I don't think it's a good idea. And now, at this point in my life, my career, I kind of do what I want.
But what if a director says something that you think is bad advice? Are you that person who's like, I don't buy that, it's not going to work?
I'll just show them why it doesn't work, you know. And having done so many series now, especially with Body of Proof, you sort of learn to self-direct. And that's fun for me because each take, I'll do it, and then in the back of my mind, this little thing will go, oh, but you could do this, or you could do that, or you could. So it keeps evolving. You know, I'm one of those people, I'd be happy doing 25 takes because I'll keep trying to explore it, because I really love exploring and trying new things. And then I work with Ron Perlman, who I adore, and after two takes, he's like, we're done.
Moving on.
Enough.
So if you're self-directing, is the next step directing others?
I don't know. I like doing it.
Sounds like you're good at it. If you can direct as ornery an actor as yourself, then maybe you can direct anybody. Ornery, yeah. Opinionated, strong-willed. What's the right verb? Adjective.
I was like that as a kid, too, though.
You did?
Yeah, I was, you know, I had to tie my own shoe, that kind of thing.
Sounds good. Yeah. And what are you excited about going forward? What's the next thing that is exciting to you that maybe is upcoming or maybe in the can?
Let's see. Well, I'm going to Provincetown, Massachusetts, to P-Town, to be honored by the Tennessee Williams Festival in a couple weeks. So I'm excited about that. I haven't been there since college.
Wow. What show did you do then?
No, I just went to visit there. Okay. Yeah. But they have a festival every September, and this is their annual dinner where they raise money. And I think it'd be really fun to talk to people who love Tennessee Williams, because now I want to keep doing it. You know, I'd love to do a Night of the Iguana in New York.
I suspect there are other people who'd be happy to see it.
I would like that, yeah.
Dana Delaney, thanks so much for coming on Geffen Podcast. Wow, I don't even know the name of my own show. Dana Delaney, thank you so much for coming on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Thank you.
That was Dana Delaney. If you like what we're doing, go on Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and share so other people can find our podcasts. And if you like Dana Delaney, check out Hand of God. It's her new Amazon series. I'm John Horn. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Download new episodes every Wednesday at podcastone.com, on the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes.